Now, a blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Letters etched into the sign read, Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear in a black-and-white film. Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn in Pat and Mike. Copyright 1952, all rights reserved. This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin. Read by Margot Stage. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles appear, co-starring Aldo Ray, with William Ching, Sammy White, George Matthews, and sports stars Susan Moran, Babe Diedrichson-Zaharias, Don Budge, Alice Marble, Frank Parker, Betty Hicks, Beverly Hansen, and Helen Detweiler. Written by Ruth Gordon and Garson Kanin. Director of Photography, William Daniels, ASC. Art Directors, Cedric Gibbons and Yuri McCleary. Film Editor, George Bemler, ACE. Music by David Raxson. Recording Supervisor, Douglas Shearer. Katherine Hepburn's Wardrobe by Ori Kelly. Produced by Lawrence Weingarten. Directed by George Cukor. Now in a tower, a bell reads, presented to Pacific Technical College by E.H. Beeminger. We scan away from it to a campus filled with mission-style buildings. Pretty young co-eds stroll past the administrative offices. Through a window, we spy a handsome man in his mid-30s conferring with his secretary. Grabbing a golf bag, he steps outside and walks past a sign. Mr. Collier Weld, Assistant Administrative Vice President. Moments later, Collier dashes to a convertible, throws his clubs into the back, and climbs into the driver's seat. Tall and blonde, he has broad shoulders and chiseled features. He pulls away from the curb, driving to a nearby building. Inside a gymnasium, a woman supervises a girls' basketball class. Pat Pemberton, the slender athletic instructor, cocks her ear, gives her whistle to an assistant, and leaves. Outside, Collier heads to a side entrance just as Pat exits out front with her own bag of clubs. She wears a white shirt over a white mock turtleneck and khakis. Marching up to the car, she dumps the bag in the back seat and leans on the horn. Collier runs back.
Hey, I was just looking for you.
I came out by the...
He kisses her cheek.
Well, you're pretty daring.
It's perfectly legal. I just looked it up. Man's allowed to kiss any girl he's engaged to. Hey, you're not going to wear those pants.
Not pants, they're slacks. Watch your language.
Look, we got a pretty delicate deal here. This game isn't so much pleasure, more business. And I don't want anything to go fluey. They're pretty conservative people, these Beemingers, and... Well, it's too late now. Come on, let's go.
No, wait.
She runs back inside. Frowning, he checks his watch. Moments later, she sprints back, scrambles over the trunk holding a skirt, and leaps into the back seat.
Go!
He hops behind the wheel and takes off. Later, she changes as he drives.
Oh, mister, the things I've done for this school.
This time it's worth it, honey. The image is good and right.
For what?
Biggest donation I've gotten all year, that's all.
Hooray for our side.
Your side especially. He's really serious about building us that new gym.
How fascinating.
He shifts the rearview mirror to let her dress in privacy.
Now, all we got to do is the right thing and save.
At your service.
Well, number one, it's he and you against Mrs. Beeminger and me.
Yes, sir?
I could make it look pretty good and lose. But Miss Beeminger's a whiz.
Do or die, that's
me. Just see that you win, that's all.
Yes, do my best.
Let's not blow this.
Yeah, do my best.
You just watch me. I'll tell you what to do, and then let's hope you can do it.
Thanks.
What?
Nothing.
Well, give us a kiss, honey. I'm nervous as a cat.
Oh.
She leans into the front seat and kisses his cheek as they pull up to a country club. They hop out of the car, Pat wearing her skirt and a cardigan. Her brunette hair is pulled back and tied with a sporty bow. They each grab their golf bags and run toward a middle-aged couple on a nearby course.
Yoo-hoo! Yoo-hoo!
Beaminger scowls and eyes his watch.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you, Mrs. Beaminger?
Quite well, thank you.
Hi.
Oh, come on, Tavia, let's go. 18 holes, a lot of holes.
All set. Say, that's quite a swing you got there, Miss B.
What do you say, Ma?
I say...
She tees off.
After you, dear. Okay, Mr. B?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
About a Pico?
Yeah.
Collier gives Pat her tea.
Now don't let me down now. Let's see a good one.
As he steps away, her brow furrows nervously. Bending over, she places her ball on the tee, then looks to Collier. He nods. Pat takes a swing. The ball bounces down the fairway.
Oh, too bad.
You've got to tense the gluteal muscles, dear. If you don't tense the gluteal muscle, well, your whole alignment is
off. You want me to get you a soapbox?
I'll play your cards.
What?
Tee off.
Thank you, lady. Thank you very much. I wouldn't have known what to do if you hadn't have told me.
Oh.
Thank you.
He sets up his shot. They watch the ball go.
Tense the gluteal muscles, did you say?
Yes, that's right. Tense.
Collier swings.
Well, I see what you mean. Makes all the difference.
Oh.
A caddy, Riley, turns to Pat.
Got to tense. Tense.
Pat smiles. Later, the group approaches a hole. The grass on the surrounding green is lush and neatly trimmed. A caddy removes the flagstick. Gripping a putter, Beaminger steps up to his ball, then gently taps it into the cup. He bends over, takes it out, and points to Collier's ball. With an eager smile, Collier comes over, lines up his club, and exchanges a look with Pat. He lightly strokes the ball, overshooting the hole.
Oh!
Beaminger nods to his wife.
Well, for heaven's sake, I know, don't I?
With a slightly crouched stance, she leans over her ball and putts it. It drops into the hole.
Beauty.
Pat steps up.
Take your time, partner.
It's all up to you now, don't forget.
Quiet, do you mind?
With an ingratiating grin, Collier takes a step back from her. Bending over, Pat sizes up her shot with her club. She stares up at her frowning fiancé, then approaches her ball. It's only about 2 feet away from the hole. Nervously tapping it, she overshoots the cup. Beaminger glares in disgust. Pat takes her second shot. The ball goes in.
Well, Fider, if you would keep your weight on your right foot the way I do it.
Later, in a sand trap.
An endowment that has some permanent value. What is the concrete thing that you could point to in the years to come with...
Beaminger swings, spraying sand in Collier's face.
What? So all I could say is to...
He spits out the grit.
You look up at that building, you're in a position to point with pride.
Is to develop your reflex. Yes, you've got to learn to relax, to give in.
Later, they head off the course. Beaminger gives his wife her winnings.
40, 60. Come here, boy.
Yes, sir.
Put that up. How about a nice tall cool one, Mr. B?
I'll take mine in the locker room.
Well, I'll see you in about 20 minutes in the lounge.
The one thing he can't stand, Mr. B, is to lose. With him, it's not the principle of the thing, it's the money.
You know, dear, where you go bad is your coordination. Now, that is your story.
She points to Pat's head,
this,
shoulder, and arm.
And this should all be parts of the same thing.
Mrs. Beaminger, if you could possibly lift the needle from that long-playing phonograph you keep in your face.
Why, phonograph?
Pat shoves her into a chair and grabs a club. Mrs. Beaminger starts to rise. Pat pushes her back down.
Watch this. Will you excuse me?
She approaches a row of practice balls. With an expert swing, she drives them high into the air in quick succession. Mrs. Beaminger stares in amazement. After hitting the final ball, Pat flings her club away.
You know what you can do with your gluteal muscle? Give it away for Christmas.
She snatches the winnings out of Mrs. Beaminger's hand and marches off. Later in the clubhouse.
Sit down, Mrs. Pemberton, sit down. What do you have to drink?
Plenty.
Lemonade?
Why not?
Right.
Strong. Plenty of lemon.
What do I care?
I've plenty of lemon.
And another thing.
Yeah?
Don't call me Mrs. Pemberton.
No?
Pat, that's me.
Okay, I'll call you Pat.
Want everybody to from now on.
Why?
Friendless, that's how I feel. Feel the whole world's against me. And vice versa. Did you ever feel that way, Charlie?
Every time I miss a shot.
There you are.
He downs a shot.
You've been golfing around here for quite a while.
Quite a...
Then how come I never saw it?
So what?
You're great.
I must be.
A natural.
Fairly seldom.
What's your handicap?
A fella.
I mean on the board.
Six.
You ought to be two.
I wish I were two.
You know what I'd like to do with you? Enter you in the women's national.
Oh, no.
Listen, if I don't know a champ when I see one, what good am I?
Oh, I haven't the time.
We'll make it. We'll coach hard the next 15 days. We'll get out there, you qualify, you play, and you win.
No, I can't play golf. I can't do
but
anything.
But what about out there? I saw...
Oh, that was because I got mad.
Well, we'll keep you mad.
No, you see, I only play with Collier Weld, and I can't do anything when he's watching me. Not anything.
Listen, a chance like this, there's no...
Be Mrs. Beeman, just money.
Collier strides in. She hands it to him.
Do you mind, Charlie? I thought you wanted to help me.
I don't do.
To what? Jam me up with one of the biggest donors I have? All I'm trying to, Pat, is understand.
How could you when I don't myself?
You don't what?
Anything. Understand. Why it is I fall to pieces whenever you give me that look.
What look?
This look.
Her eyes bulge.
That's me?
Sure. Makes me feel you don't believe in me and never will.
You're just overwrought.
And you're just overpowering.
Now, let's not squabble.
Okay.
Huh? I ought to better go see if I can square things with the Beaminges.
Why try?
Let's face it, Pat. He's a power. He's out there screaming about firing you.
He couldn't.
Why not?
Because I've quit.
When?
Right now.
Oh, no. Well, this is no place to talk now.
Okay, later.
He kisses the back of her head.
Don't get frazzled, dear. Don't get frazzled.
As he leaves, the 40-ish dark-haired Charlie re-enters.
Everybody frazzles everybody. Then they turn around and tell them, don't be.
What?
That true, Charlie?
What's true?
What you think I could do?
Scout's honor.
All right, then.
Great.
I'll show her.
Show who?
Show myself, that's who.
Huh?
That's right. Because you know how to not get yourself frazzled? Get unfrazzled.
Now, at the tournament, a banner outside the clubhouse reads, Women's National Match Play Championship. Nearby, a crowd strolls out to the course.
Nearly all of the 60 girls who have entered this tournament have now turned in their scorecard. But let me repeat, ladies and gentlemen, only the 16 best will be eligible to compete for match play, which begins tomorrow. Your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen. We have another score. Mrs. Patricia Pemberton has just qualified with a sparkling 77.
Behind the announcer, a man marks down her score on a large board. Beaming, Pat watches, then hands Charlie her ball and heads into the press room. Inside, photographers snap a golfer's photo.
So that, ladies and gentlemen, leaves only one contender still to be... Yes, here she comes now, the mighty Bay. We'll have her score for you in just a second. Here it is now. Wow!
Nice
ladies
round,
and gentlemen, the top score of the day. Mrs. Bay Deeks at Harriet has just qualified with a sensational 73.
Pat poses with the other qualifiers.
From left to right, Beverly Hanson, Babes of Harris, Helen Detweiler, Betty Hicks, Mary Morgan, Harriet Sauter, and Mrs. Patricia Bennett.
Outside, spectators leave the course. Now, two men in rakish fedoras climb through the window of a hotel room and sneak inside. As they glance around, one checks the luggage tag on a suitcase. It reads, Contestant, Mrs. Patricia Pemberton. In his late 40s, the man has blonde hair and ruggedly attractive features. Suddenly, he brings a handkerchief to his nose. Looking around, he spots a vase filled with roses. The second snooper quickly puts it outside. The first man gestures to his friend. They rush into the bathroom to hide. Pat enters. She dumps her golf shoes on a dresser, pulls off her cardigan and throws it beside them. Unbuttoning her blouse, she kicks off her high heels, then takes off her shirt. The discarded clothes are left in a chair as she unzips her skirt and steps out of it. Wearing only a long slip, she strides into the bathroom.
Don't be scared.
What is this, anyway?
Sit down. Come over here and sit down. Take it easy. I never like to see an athlete wear herself out.
Or herself, please, maybe.
If this is a holdup, a robbery or something...
Ladies, we didn't come here to be insulted.
Take it easy.
Come on, tell her, will you? Identify yourself.
Sit down. Now, you've been on your feet the whole day. Why don't you sit down and take it easy?
She holds a robe up to her neck.
Mrs. Pemberton, I'd like to introduce myself. Mike Colliver. My associate, Bonnie Grove.
Pleasure.
Take a chair, Bonnie.
They sit.
Mrs. Pemberton, I want to tell you that I have been watching you like eagle eye the last couple of days. And I'm here to tell you you are one beautiful thing to watch in action. Yes, sir, I've been around this sports racket since before I can remember. And I'm here to tell you you are what I call no doubt fast.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a plain statement of fact. You figure to win this?
So does everybody.
Never mind everybody. Just let's concentrate on you for an instance. Yes or no?
Yes.
Tell me... off the record, what's your pitch?
What is it with you?
Is it business, pleasure? You want to get your picture in a paper? What?
I'm afraid I really don't know.
You see, the way I think, figured out, honey, you're a cinch to win this, you know. You can't miss copping this thing in a walk without someone dismantles you.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, you're not supposed to know. You're just supposed to play. I'm supposed to know, and I do. Tell me, how smart are you anyway?
Very, in some things.
How's about money? What kind of a thing is that?
Not very.
Oh, that's too bad. That's too bad. Because I got a way for you to stash away a role, surprise you.
I'd like that.
You would? How would you like to come in second?
She looks from Barney to Mike.
I wouldn't.
Square like I figured.
Oh, that's too bad. That's too bad. You come in second, you could do very good in the money department. If you come in first, they give you a cup. It's too big to drink out of even. What's that?
I think you better get out.
Mention your number. Think it over anyway. Here. This is me. In New York, strictly legitimate, well-known. I own and operate Davy Hucko. Davy Hucko. Mean anything?
No.
He shows her a snapshot of a boxer.
No.
Heavyweight champion of the world.
In a couple of years.
Now to get back to you. The only thing you've got to do is to lose a little. And our only problem is going to be to find bushel baskets big enough to carry this stuff away.
Yes?
Room service.
Just a minute.
Well, whether you do or whether you don't, I got to tell you this. You're a beautiful thing to watch in action.
He flashes a sly smile, then follows Barney out the window. The smaller, dark-haired Barney waits for him on the other side. Mike shoves his hands into his pants pockets as the two start to walk off.
Your opinion. How many do you think you'll find honest out of 100?
Two on an average.
I'd say three.
All right, three.
Too bad she couldn't have been one of the 97, one of the three.
Oh, that's a question.
What a beautiful buck we could have made with her.
Hey, maybe she'd have a change of mind.
Not a chance.
Are you sure?
See her face?
Yeah.
A real honest face. Only disgusting thing about her.
At the tournament.
We're having magnificent weather for the opening day of the Women's National Match Play Championship, and the last twosome, Miss Betty Hicks and Mrs. Patricia Pemberton, will tee off in just a moment. We'd like to remind you that today is only the first day of 4 days of tournament play, and tomorrow's quarterfinal round will begin promptly at 10 o'clock.
On the tee now, Betty Hicks.
As the golfer steps out onto the teeing ground, Pat waits on the sidelines. Hicks sets up her ball, assumes her stance, and swings.
On the tee now, Patricia Pemberton.
Mike and Barney watch in the crowd of spectators. Pat swings, driving her ball straight and high. Charlie grins from the sidelines. A little later, the group stands on the fairway, awaiting the next shot. Pat's up. She takes a few practice strokes, then swings, lofting the ball a good distance away. Barney stands behind Mike.
Another bullseye.
Some straight shooter, this kid.
Yeah, that's our trouble.
The crowd moves on. Further into the course, Pat strides with confidence as the others follow. She wears slacks and an Oxford shirt. Nearby, a reporter grips a handheld radio phone connected to the press room.
This is the third twosome. Pemberton's still four up over Hicks.
Later, Pat steps into a water hazard. Her ball sits in a muddy stream about an inch deep. She stares down at it for a moment, then starts to pick it up.
Oh, she's picking it up.
Don't waste the shot.
Yours is shot, Pat.
Give me the wedge, will you? I guess they all want to see me take a shower.
The putting green sits a few yards away. Pat swings, spraying water. The ball lands a yard from the hole.
Pressure gets greater and greater, and today with only four contestants left, we find we have three favorites and one rank outsider still battling it out.
The board shows Pat against Detweiler. Now, Beverly Hansen and Babe Diedrichsen-Zaharias. On the side of a hill, Hansen takes her shot.
Beautiful shot, Dad. Beautiful.
The group heads farther down the fairway toward the next shot. Meanwhile, Pat and her opponent Helen Detweiler face off. Approaching her ball, Pat grabs a club and prepares to swing. Babe and Hansen's group approaches from the other direction. Pat's ball soars over the fairway. Her group moves on. Nearby, Babe, tall and broad-shouldered with handsome features, exchanges a wood for an iron. The putting green sits in the distance behind two sand traps. Babe squints at it, lines up her club, then swings. Her ball lands a few feet from the flag. Later, near a hole, Detweiler puts down a marker on the green, then picks up her ball. She turns to Pat, who stands beside a tree.
Gee, Pat, that's a rough shot.
Pat exchanges a smile with Charlie, then goes over to her ball. It rests at the base of the tree. She steps her right foot back and presses against the trunk. Mike watches eagerly as she puts the ball. It rolls onto the green, just misses the hole, and stops a foot away. Now, the announcer at the scoreboard.
Today is payoff day. Payoff day for one of these two girls who have battled their way up through the ranks of America's top women golfers to finally meet for the national match play crown. We won't hazard a guess as to which of these girls will be the eventual winner.
Now, a golfer puts her ball. It drops into a hole. Bending down, she picks it up. It's Babe. She kisses her ball and waves to the crowd. The next golfer puts her ball. It also goes in. As she picks it up, we see it's Pat. Babe gives her a congratulatory tap on the back. As the group moves on, Barney beams at Mike.
End of the 16th. Pemberton still one up on Zaharias.
A radio reporter stands on top of a truck. Behind him, the large crowd heads to the teeing ground. Most jog in order to get a good spot. Pat's up first. She carefully places her tee in the grass, sets her ball on top, and lines up her club. In the crowd, Collier comes up behind Charlie. With a bright smile, Pat turns toward the onlookers. Spotting her fiancé, her grin fades. He blows her a kiss. Pat bites down on her finger, then turns to her caddy.
I think I'll try three here.
A little long for this hole.
Well.
Gripping an iron, she swings. The ball zooms through the air, bounces across the green, then tumbles into a sand trap beyond the hole. Charlie frowns, then glances at Collier, who stuffs his hands into his pants pockets with a smug look. Barney eyes Mike nervously. Babe swings. Her ball lands on the green, 10 feet from the cup. Nearby, the press reporter grips his radio phone.
Pemberton overshot the 17th. Zaharias well placed on the green.
Pat steps into the bunker, a wide depression filled with sand. She lines up her club and swings, knocking the ball over the green and into a sand trap on the other side. Charlie glares at the ball. Mike's brow furrows in disbelief. He scans through the crowd curiously. Pat jogs into the second bunker, stares down at her ball, then exchanges her club. Legs spread shoulder-width apart, she assumes her stance and hits the ball, gently lofting it onto the edge of the green. Mike presses his lips together. Babe's up next. She putts her ball and misses the cup. Pat picks up both balls and tosses Babe hers. Nearby, the reporter clenches his phone.
The Harriers won the 17th. All even, going to 18th.
At the next teeing ground, Babe lines up her club, gazes into the distance for a moment, then swings. Holding a driver, Pat sticks her tee into the ground, then sets up her ball and club. Taking a practice stroke, she knocks the ball off the tee. Barney's mouth drops open. He shoots a look at Mike. Pat places her ball back on the tee, nervously rubs her palms on her skirt, then lines up her club again. She swings. Barney covers his face with his hand. Pat's ball lands in a nearby grove, bouncing along a row of trees. She picks up her tee and moves on. The crowd splits in two. Some traipse over the grounds, others stroll down a walkway, Mike and Barney among them.
Mike!
I ain't in.
You don't think she could have not understood you? Or misunderstood you?
Trying to catch your eyes. I'll settle for one eye.
If it turns out we got our singles mixed, I'm going to cut off my arm.
You may have to if we're going to eat tomorrow.
As they step up to the sidelines, a ball bounces near the final hole.
What happened?
Nothing good. The baby's on the green.
In the grove, Pat's ball sits in a rough patch of grass. She approaches it.
Clear the fairway, please.
Grabbing a wood, she takes a few practice strokes, then lines up her club. The ball rolls near the flag, stopping beside Babe's. Spectators quickly rush over, surrounding the green. A man wearing a tartan kilt and black beret with two ribbons hanging down the back strides toward the hole's flag.
The Pendleton ball! The Zaharias ball! This match is all square, and this is the final hole!
He walks off. A caddy ambles over and takes hold of the flagstick. Babe eyes her shot, lining it up with her putter. Seated on the grass, Collier clenches a piece of straw between his teeth and watches with the other spectators. Charlie stands on the sidelines, hands in his pockets and his mouth set in a straight line. As Babe puts her ball, the caddy pulls the flag out of the hole. The ball stops 2 feet to the right of the cup. In the crowd, Barney winces beside Mike, who keeps his eyes trained on the green. Pat's up next. She puts her ball. It stops a foot closer to the hole. The two women approach. Pat sets down a marker, then removes her ball. Bending over, Babe plucks a stray piece of dirt off the green, then sizes up her shot. Babe lines up her putter and gently taps the ball. It drops into the hole. Mike frowns. Pat puts her ball back in place of the marker, then bends down to size up her shot. Glancing up, she spots Collier, who flashes a weak smile and nods. Shifting her gaze, Pat bites down on her finger. She rises and tentatively approaches her ball, a foot from the hole. She putts. Her ball overshoots the cup. Mike exchanges a look with Barney as Pat picks up her ball. Reporters rush the green and surround the two women. Photographers snap pictures as the golfers shake hands. Two uniformed guards come up to Babe and escort her off the green. Pat steps away, pressing through the crowd. Moments later, she wraps a cardigan around her shoulders and saunters up to a water fountain beneath an ivy-covered trellis. As she takes a drink and splashes water onto her face, Mike and Barney approach.
Hello. Oh, hello.
Was that on purpose or what?
Or what?
Glad to hear that, at least.
You see, what happened anyway, if you had been willing to happen it on purpose, you could have been walking out of here with a nice bundle, with a bushel basket, like I said, it just goes to show.
Certainly does.
Well, I still think you got possibilities.
Thanks.
You got my card, my business card?
Yeah.
We'll get in touch. You know, there's a nice dollar laying around waiting for you and I to pick it up.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not...
I mean, legitimate, you know. Legitimate. Oh, there's a, you know...
She walks off.
Very few brains.
Yeah, there's one thing I gotta say, though.
What?
Nicely packed, that kid.
Is it that?
Not much meat on it, but what's there is cheers.
Now on a train.
Well, here we are. These two.
Collier enters with Pat.
Please, don't bother.
Pat sits. He drops beside her.
Well, off we go.
Off we go.
Feel any better?
Well, no.
This too will pass away. Hey, who said that?
I don't know.
Hey, how about looking at the bright side of this, for instance? Now, take this. As long as your job's out of the way, we move our date up, tie the old knot. I think you've worked long enough, done enough, don't you?
Too much.
After all, what are you trying to prove? Who are you trying to lick?
Myself.
You're just the kid who can do it.
Collier, do you sort of... I don't think you mean to, but do you think of me as just the little woman?
That's right. But myself as a little man.
Right now, I feel sort of like a flop that you're rescuing. I'm flummoxed, that's what I am. Maybe we ought to wait until I don't feel so carved up, so nobody.
Why don't you just let me take charge?
Have to be in charge of myself.
Oh, but what's the good of this?
Have to have time to think it over, is all.
Well, let's see that you don't think it under. It's a nice long ride. Just take your time.
She begins to chuck her luggage out of the window.
That's right. And I'm not going to take it. I can't, that's all.
Can't what?
Go back. Not this way. What's there to go back to?
Oh, now, don't you think you're just being a little...
I've got to do something to prove to you. Prove to myself. Lend me some money, will you? Prove to both of us, in fact, everybody, that I'm not just a...
Say, back.
He follows her out the back.
Wait a second, I'm coming along, too.
No, please.
You can't get off now, lady.
A porter scowls as she jumps from the rear of the train. Watching it pull out of the station, she waves goodbye to Collier, then heads to her suitcases and bag of clubs. Now, in the heart of Times Square, we scan to the second floor window of a building. A sign reads, Coliseum Sports Enterprises, Mike Conovan. Inside, Mike grips a telephone.
Ruby, let me get a word in edgeways, will you? Ruby. Win, lose, or draw, when did Hucko ever not give you action? Now, you know yourself as well as I know myself that that's what they pay for, isn't action.
In the dingy office, yeah, Barney sits nearby with two other men and Hucko, the boxer from the snapshot.
Right. Let me know, huh, Ruby? Right, boys. Right.
He approaches Hucko.
What do you weigh this morning?
98. Up two.
Why up two? G. Dexter?
No, honest.
Let him talk himself, will you?
No, honest.
What's the matter with you? Where's the control?
I thought it could be. He's still growing.
You'll be growing in Central Park, the two of yous, if you don't watch out.
He eyes the white-haired trainer. Hucko, brawny with closely cropped hair, fixes his tie.
Have another beer?
No, thanks. No more.
You see that?
Davey, what are you doing to me?
Nervous. Thirsty.
Water. Did you ever hear of water? Why don't you drink water?
Ashamed.
You what?
Nervous, thirsty. I go in the place. I'm ashamed to ask for free water. Took one beer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you like it?
Yeah.
What?
No.
Well, Hucko, I guess it's time to ask you the three questions, isn't it? Are you ready?
The boxer nods.
Who made you, Hucko?
You, Mike.
Who owns the biggest piece of you?
You, Mike.
What'll happen if I drop you?
I go right down a drain, Mike.
And
stay there.
Who made you?
You, Mike.
Who owns the biggest piece of you?
You, Mike.
What'll happen if I drop you?
Go right down a drain, Mike.
And
stay there.
Yeah. Take him back to the gym.
We just come from.
Well, go on back from. And don't let him out of there. He's back to the 96 even. He's liable to go on Friday night. He can't have him overweight. Go on now, get going.
Hucko extends his hand.
I'll shake it when I don't weigh so much.
The boxer follows his trainer out.
We ought to enter him in the sixth race next Saturday. If little Nell's leg don't unstiffen.
What are you, a comedian? There's an agent down the hall that handles comedians. What about that leg?
Loosening by the minute.
What about her starts?
Still slow. I think she feels depressed.
She feels depressed, huh? Well, she's going to feel the good boing of a needle if she don't get going, I'll tell you that. I'm getting...
He spots Pat in the hall.
Holt! No! Come in! Well, well! What? Swing around in the morning and phone me the time. Goodbye.
He pushes the horse trainer out.
Hello! Who'd have believed this? Well, I'm upside down with surprise.
Why?
What can I do for you?
What I came to ask you.
Me what?
What you can do for me.
What did you have in mind?
Well, you said something about a bushel basket.
Oh, yes, sure. I remember. Well, now let's start off with a few statistics or two. How much would you say the people in the USA spend on sports a year? Total amount?
No idea. No. Mm.
Surprise you if I said 150 million?
Yes.
Well, it's 300 million. And some of it belongs to us by rights.
How do you like that?
My.
You see, it's all built up around personality, see, which I figure you may be one of. Now, of course, I can't be sure of that, but the way things look to me, I think so.
All right.
Now, of course, what you need is a manager. B, a promoter. And that's me, A and B.
All right.
Now, of course, the first thing you would have to turn pro, is that okay?
Okay.
All right, with your husband?
My...
Mrs. Pat Pemberton, ain't that how they introduced you?
I'm a widow.
What kind, Mary?
Settle down, will you? All right, so now you're a pro. Now we gotta, of course, go out and find the competitions.
Mm-hmm. Trouble is, this time of the year, they're far in between.
Aren't there other things? I mean, not golf.
What do you mean, other things?
Other sports.
You do other sports?
I've only played golf for a year or so.
That's all?
Yes, my beau asked me to take it up before that.
What is this beau deal? What is that?
Well...
You see, if we're going to be partners, I kind of like to know what the layout is, you know. Where is your beau?
California.
Live there? Work there?
Pacific Tech.
Oh, this is all right with him, this whole switch.
No. That is, yes.
Well, now, women don't go so fast. You see, if we're partners, we'd be on a kind of a schedule, you know. I don't know how often or how many times we could get to be around California.
That would be all right. For the moment.
Oh?
Yeah.
I see. Now, what other sports?
Well, tennis. That's number one. I'm really good at that.
You mean you're better than with the sticks?
Oh, yes, much. And then, of course, the usual shooting.
Shoot?
Well, you know, ski, range, and some archery.
Say, you...
Ice hockey, basketball, and a little baseball.
Where did you play baseball?
Pacific Tech. I was there several years.
What's the matter? You couldn't pass?
No, I was faculty.
That's like a teacher. Well, ain't it? You're not by some chance a boxer.
Just 16-ounce gloves, I'm afraid. Eights have a tendency to...
That's all, honey. That's all. Say no more. Of course, there's always a chance that you could be an escaped fruitcake. But if there is something in what is a matter of fact, if there is anything in what you say, I am going to promote you into the king of the world. Queen, I mean. Let's go.
On an outdoor tennis court, Pat, wearing a white skirt and shirt, faces a male opponent.
Like to see me serve a few, Mr. Conovan?
Oh, no. Just hit a couple.
She bounces a ball to get a feel for it, then tosses it into the air and smashes it with her racket. Her opponent runs toward the ball, but can't get to it in time. She serves again. It's another ace. Barney brings his hands together and mutters as if praying. Pat serves a third ace. Barney grins. Mike's eyes grow wide in shock. Later, at a shooting gallery. Pat aims a rifle at moving targets. She hits every one. Mike taps her on the shoulder gently, then a little harder to get her attention. She turns to face him. He nods with a smile. Now, we glimpse the outside of a restaurant. A sign reads, Lindy's. Inside the bustling establishment, Mike and Pat sit with three other men. Mike and Pat sign a document.
Gotta be notary public, don't it?
Take care of that, don't worry.
All right, we ought to have a glass of something, you know, for luck.
What do you mean a glass of something for luck? What am I, some kind of an AC juicy gambler? Us two bucking into each other. That's all the luck any man deserves from now on. It's hard work and promotion and so forth. And promotion.
Okay, Mike, I'll get these back to you.
All right.
And yours too, miss.
Thank you.
So, let's go.
I'd like a martini, please. Very, very dry.
Very, very nothing. Cancel that.
What?
Beer, beer, beer.
Beer, beer, beer.
Corned beef, Swiss, and rye.
Corned beef. I'll have beef stew.
Same.
And for the lady?
Oh, small steak, rare.
Medium.
Rare, rare, rare. And a baked potato and some cream spinach.
Coffee?
Yeah, yeah, coffee.
Yes,
coffee.
Please, large.
No, 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 milk.
Please, will you? I'm a busy man.
Two coffees and one milk.
Everybody takes the habit to change one the other's minds. Could take a whole half an hour for one.
Could be here for the next.
What's the matter with you?
Who's talking to you?
Well, who then?
Myself. You mind if I talk to myself?
No, no, no.
I'd like a martini, please.
Oh, now, look, girlie. Do me a favor. Don't be hard to handle, will you? Remember, it's going to be hard enough, even if you're easy.
I don't see what right you have.
Read your contract.
What?
Training clause.
Just silly.
Well, that's not for you to decide, you know. I have to watch your shape.
There's nothing wrong with my... Well, what shape are you talking about?
What shape are you talking about?
I'm in perfect condition, if that's what you mean.
Good, good, that's fine. Let's just keep you that way. We got a long way to go, you know.
I must say...
Oh, no, don't race your motor.
She takes out a cigarette and starts to light it. Watching her, his eyes bulge, his mouth hangs agape.
What is this?
What?
What, are you trying to needle me or something?
I'm sure I don't...
There's a sign, you know, no smoking.
Where?
I just put it up inside your head.
See, the point of... What's to prevent me smoking when you're not around?
When am I not around?
You don't expect to be watching me every minute. Out of every 24 hours. Out of every day, do you?
He nods.
If I have to, sure.
Not sure I'll like that.
Not asking you to like it. But you see, pretty soon I'll trust you. Because you'll trust me. Because what's good for you is good for me and you for me, see? We're the same. We're equal. We're partners, see? 5-0, 5-0. You got to realize your body's important. And it's important to me, too. And I ain't letting you throw no martinis down there. Or no smoke. No more than I let him throw them down Little Nell.
Who's that?
Oh, that's my horse.
He shows her a photo.
Oh.
She may win Saturday. Hold a thought. And another thing, no late hours. And, of course, men are out. In any manner, shape, or form. You're in training. Go on now, eat your food. Nice and slow, kind of, you know, relaxed inside.
Don't forget to throw me over your shoulder and burp me after lunch.
I will if you need it.
She shoots him a look.
I'm so glad you plan to look after me as well as you do your horse.
You want a joke? Joke. But I'm here to tell you something. Someday you'll realize something, and that something is this. We all got to work together, see? We all got to cooperate. Look, everybody's sitting around a place. Everybody's sitting around the world. And everybody's brain has got something cooking inside, see? Well, nobody's got a better dream than me. Believe me, I stand them off.
What is it?
I can see myself with the brakes. I can wind up with the top man, the top horse, and the top woman.
He takes her knife and fork and starts to cut up her food. Now, a sign reads, Pittsburgh Municipal Arena, Professional Tennis Playoff. In mixed doubles, Frankie Parker and Pat Pemberton versus Donald Budge and Alice Marble. Inside on the court, Budge serves to Pat, who stands diagonally across court. She returns, he volleys it back. Pat's teammate hits it to Marble. As the two teams volley back and forth, Pat stays light on her feet, eyeing the ball. She hits an overhead shot down center court. Budge stumbles, unable to return it.
Advantage, Miss Pemberton and Mr. Parker.
Budge serves again, lofting the ball to Parker. He returns it. Budge hits it back. Close to the net, Pat jabs over a backhand, then a forehand. She switches places with her partner, who lobs the ball high into the far court. Budge returns it. Parker and Marble volley. Then Pat nails it straight down the center line.
Parker, they lead 5-3 in the first set.
A montage shows different cities. The Lincoln Memorial. A sign for the Denver Coliseum reading Pro Tennis, Pemberton versus Marble, the Manhattan skyline, and a San Francisco billboard announcing Pemberton versus Moran. Now in a locker room, Pat does knee bends while Mike watches.
I think that's enough now. You better quit.
Not yet.
Want to get all tired out? You got a long day.
Mm-mm. Long and hard.
Why hard?
Oh, I don't know. This place and all the different people turning up. You know, ones I know.
Well, why? I don't dig that. Yeah. I should think you'd be great. Your hometown.
Maybe I would if it weren't for...
Holding a handkerchief to his nose, he picks up a vase of roses and studies a card from Collier, who wants to make you jollier. He puts them outside, then steps back in.
Come on now, come on. Come on, you better quit your puffing.
Mommy, tell you that there are more than 100 of my Pacific Tech girls out there?
No, they got a friend for me.
An old friend.
That's it. Now, will you please remember, start slow. Don't show them all your stuff at once. Remember, you're the best. Even if you don't think so, I do. Just play your regular game, you know.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, just like you.
She pauses in the doorway.
You know what I'm going to do? For luck?
No.
Give you a great big kiss.
She does, on his cheek.
Because if you don't start slow, you see, by the 15th or 16th game, you're going to start depressed. We got to remember the money dates are coming up now. The big money dates.
Strolling into the arena, they stand behind bleachers and stare down at the courts below at a game in progress. They start down a staircase. Moments later.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next match will be between Pat Pemberton of Oakland and Gussie Moran of Santa Monica, California.
Where's he sitting?
Around. Who's sitting?
Collier.
Over here, X4.
Are you sure?
Gorgeous Gussie.
Am I sure? Paid for it myself. He's in on the cupola.
Thanks.
I'd have paid him better if he'd stayed home.
And her opponent, California's own Pat Pemberton.
Pat grips several rackets as she strolls onto the court. Handing off all but one to a ball boy, she breezes up to her opponent, who clenches her own. Pat nods to her.
Rough.
Moran twirls her racket on the ground.
I'll serve.
They examine it, then take their sides. Posing for photographers, the two shake hands across the net. The photographers back away as the women head across the court. Pat looks for Collier in the crowd. His box seats are empty. She shrugs, then steps up to her baseline. Moran, in a short satiny tennis dress with a flower in her hair, pirouettes for the photographers. Pat wears functional but cute shorts and a buttoned shirt. A ribbon adorns her hair, pulled back in a bun. She hits a practice serve to Moran, who returns it. Mike watches from the wings.
This is the feature event of the afternoon, climaxing a cross-country tour. As of today, Mrs. Pemberton and Miss Moran are tied with 22 matches apiece. This match will be the best 2 out of 3 sets.
Mike wipes lipstick off his cheek, then affectionately saves his handkerchief.
Linesman ready. Players ready. Mrs. Pemberton will serve first. Lay.
Pat tosses her ball into the air. Moran backhands a return. Pat hits a forehand down the sideline. Moran backhands again. Pat a forehand slice. Moran rushes to return it. Pat hits cross court, then a simple drop shot.
15, Mrs. Pemberton.
Pat serves. Moran hits a backhand. Pat does also. Moran a backhand slice. They volley at the net, hitting the ball before it bounces. Pat hits one to the back court, out of Moran's reach. Pat gets a new ball, bouncing it with her racket. Moran stands at the ready, spreading her feet wide apart. Pat serves. Moran hits it back. Pat rushes back and forth along her baseline, making difficult shots. She hits a lob high into the air. It bounces in the back court. Moran stumbles to return it, but can't get back in time.
Formula.
Pat receives two new balls and serves. Moran switches to the left corner of her baseline. They hit a few easy shots until Moran returns one from her left-hand corner, then hits a tricky forehand from the other corner. Each woman sprints up and down the court to return the ball. Spectators surround them on all sides, filling almost every seat. Moran launches a lob from her baseline. Pat smashes it cross court.
Shame to Mrs. Pemberton. She leaves one game to love in the first set. Mrs. Pemberton won the first set 6-3. She now leads 3-2 in the second set.
Pat prepares to serve. Moran returns it from her baseline. In the stands, Collier enters with two pretty young women and a middle-aged couple. They take the empty box seats, which stand in two rows. Collier hesitantly sits in the front. Pat whacks the ball to the back court. Moran can't return it. Glancing into the crowd, Pat spots Collier. Startled, she forces a smile. He grins and blows her a kiss. Stepping up to her baseline, Pat fumbles a catch from the ball boy. She prepares to swing. The ball hits the net. About to serve again, she anxiously stops when she spots the ball boy still retrieving the first ball. On the second serve, she hits the net again.
Double fault, 15 all.
In the wings, Mike watches with concern. Pat serves again. Moran returns it. Pat hits an easy forehand, gently pushing the ball over the net. Collier and his guests turn their heads from side to side, following the ball. The players trade shots back and forth until Pat hits a simple forehand into the net.
15-30.
Mike's mouth curls down in a frown. Pat serves again, hitting the ball into the net. Mike's brow furrows. Pat serves another ball into the net.
Double fault, 15-40.
She plays pretty good tennis. She just gets that way every once in a while.
Mike glares at Collier and his guests. Pat serves again. Moran hits it down Pat's right side. Pat returns. Moran sends the ball across the court. Pat runs back and forth, trying to make returns. As Moran knocks one toward the corner, Pat stumbles, crashing to the floor. Mike steps forward, his brow knit worriedly. Pat jumps to her feet. She steps onto the court and picks up her racket. One of Collier's guests pats him on the shoulder. He scrunches his face in embarrassment. Pat eyes him, then turns to face her opponent. Moran serves. As Pat returns, the net seems to grow taller, snagging the ball. Pat returns another serve. The net jumps up again. After the next serve, the net seems 20 feet tall. Pat's ball collides into it. The umpire changes into Collier. The net judge does too, and also a ball boy. They all chuckle at her. Eyes wide with shock, Pat heads back to the baseline. On the other side of the court, Moran clenches a massive racket twice the normal size. Pat's is suddenly two sizes too small. Moran easily hits a ball with her mighty racket. Pat struggles to return it with her teensy one. Moran lofts a forehand, which Pat just returns. As the ball comes flying back at Pat, it divides into a dozen balls, hurtling toward her head. Pat faints with the racket before her face. Later, in the locker room, she lies on a table covered with a robe. Mike holds smelling salts to her nose. Barney gives her a sip of water, then walks out.
Oh, I just couldn't make anything to hear
you. That happens, you know, a little slump. A dip, a couple of weeks rest.
No, I'm okay.
Oh, yeah, we're going over to Elkwood Acres over in New Jersey. Wonderful place.
No, I'm all right.
You know, you mean more to me than all them bucks. I'm going to take care of you good.
Who's that? Tell them to go away.
Collier enters.
Oh, poor darling.
Oh, hello, Carl. I'm all right. Wasn't that a mess, though? Oh, this is Mr. Conovan, Mr. Wells.
Hello. How do you do? I'm taking you home, Pat. I'll get your things together.
I'm all right here.
You'll excuse us, please.
If it's something about going somewhere you mind, I'd like to stick around. I'd like to kind of be in on it.
I'm sorry. We can't oblige.
Well, I have a contract, you know. I'll send you a copy of it. It says plain.
Look, Fred.
Don't get mad.
Yeah. You've been responsible for wrecking this girl's health, and I'm not going to let her stay around here with this bunch.
Let's not raise your voice now.
Well, you don't intimidate me. I've never even heard of you.
No, but I've heard of you. Joe Jinks, that's you. You know, except when you're around, we got a very valuable piece of property here. And, you know, I ain't the only one concerned, you know. I own the biggest piece of this kid, 51%. But there are other guys, you know, that are in too, that own small pieces. And with her potential, I don't think they'd like to see it all pulled right out from under them, you know. Now, I am in no position to mention their names by name, but I can tell you this. They are the kind of types that have been known to act very hot-headed in their day and age.
Look, Conovan, you may think that you own 51% of her, but you'll find out that I own all of her.
No, I would advise... Get away from me, all of you. Nobody owns anything of anybody except myself. Go away, both of you. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Just go away.
Go away.
Collier steps out, leaving Pat on the table, her head covered with the robe. Mike shuts the door as Barney re-enters.
Hey, what is this? What's happened here? What's happened?
Mike shrugs. Now, Pat and Hucko jog side by side down a country path. Mike follows on a bicycle.
Hey, slow down.
They do. He pulls up between them.
How you holding?
Okay.
Feet heavy?
Mine's heavy, Mike.
Well, yours is supposed to be heavy. You're a heavyweight, ain't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Like I told you, don't feel like running, slow down. You're supposed to feel like it. That shows you're in condition. People do like they feel. They go on sometimes practically forever, some of them.
Guess you'll go on practically forever. You stay on that bike.
Hucko runs ahead.
You're the best because you feel right. I tell you, last week I was worried. I just like to mention. And it was my fault, too. I'm sorry.
Nothing to do with you.
Yeah, pushed you too hard, too fast.
I know what it was.
Can't you tell me?
Too personal.
Hey!
She runs faster. He pedals up to her.
Hey! Should mean nothing too personal between the two of you and me.
It was Collier. Never can do anything when he's watching me. It's always been that way.
Why?
Love with him, I guess.
Oh. Like me with lobster.
What?
Lobster. The one thing I'm nuts about. The one thing that don't agree with me. Like you and him.
Not exactly.
Why?
Well, you see, this is a question of getting married. You've never been married to a lobster.
That's what you think.
Later, Pat plays cards with Hucko and others. Mike sticks his hand in to shut off the light.
Hey, knock it off!
He turns it back on. Mike enters the training room. The group sits at a table behind a boxing ring.
What is this?
Just finishing, Mike.
You know what time it is?
In a minute.
9:10.
He overturns their table.
We just would have...
Now we'll never know.
I want you in bed and asleep in 5 minutes. You get it? No comic books. Go right to sleep. Get that?
Right to sleep, yeah, Mike.
I'd give it to you for letting him.
I lost my head.
You know, in your business, you shouldn't get so engrossed. Let's go.
He points to Pat, who follows him out a side door. They stroll to a cabin.
I was thinking about all that stuff on the road.
Me too.
Yeah, funny how things come out like that. Yeah, sure.
Good night.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd go in with you.
Yeah?
A couple of things I want to go over with you.
Well, couldn't they wait?
Well, maybe they could, but I don't know if I could.
The only thing is, my manager.
Your manager? What?
He's a little strict, and to tell you the truth, I'm a bit scared of him.
You are?
Yeah. I don't drink. That's on account of him. Or smoke, that's him too. And the thing he's strictest about of all is men.
Men, huh?
Yeah, you know, dates and late hours and emotional involvements and...
Well, he's got a point there.
In fact, he doesn't even want me to have anything to do with my fella.
No.
No.
You make him sound like an awful gumboil.
Oh, I don't know. He's not so bad, really. I think I'm just an animal to him. Like little Nell.
Is that what you think?
Yeah.
You sound like a gumboy yourself.
Night.
Good night.
He closes the door behind her, glancing through a pane, then thoughtfully crinkles his brow. Inside, Pat turns down her bed and switches on a radio. Winding a clock, she sits beside a dresser and gazes at a photo of herself and Collier. Looking away, she shrugs. When she glances back, Collier's face turns into Mike's. Her eyes widen in amazement. She chuckles to herself, then gazes back at the photo. Mike's face has turned back to Collier's. As she does a slow double take, Pat's mouth hangs agape. Outside, Mike strolls up to a stable. His horse, Little Nell, comes over. She has a dark, glossy coat and a long silken mane. Her pointed ears are thrust forward. Mike takes hold of her bridle, pulls her closer, and feeds her something from his hand. As she chews, he pats her neck and gazes at her. Suddenly, Pat's face becomes superimposed over Little Nell's. It's stretched and elongated down the horse's long head. Mike eyes the vision curiously. He gently tugs on the horse's snout and strokes her as Pat's face fades away.
If you only were, honey.
He beams, then reaches into his pocket for more food. Daytime. Barney sits on a cabin's porch rolling dice. Hucko comes up.
Come on.
Hey, where'd you drop from?
Hello, Barn.
Something happened? The bout off?
No, on. So far.
Then what?
I have to talk to him. Mike is all I know.
So why couldn't you use the phone?
Because people hang up. Where's he?
Inside.
With her.
You go to the head of the class.
Hucko peeks through a window.
What are they doing?
He's examining her.
Why?
Why do you think? He wants to see into her condition.
Why don't he examine me? Ain't I fighting Friday?
Because you he's not worried about.
But he's worried about her.
He's worried about her condition. He'd like to see you make out next week down at that pro match.
Why don't he examine into my condition? Ain't I fighting Friday?
Davey, you sometimes like taking a ride on a merry-go-round.
The last time I went on a merry-go-round, I threw up.
That's good.
I shouldn't have gone on that up and down one. That's what did it.
Going up and down, everybody goes up and down.
Why don't he examine me?
Quit bugging me, will you?
I mentioned about my stitch, but he don't care. Just because I've been knocked out the last four times, he's lost faith in me.
Funny guy.
I don't think it's his fault. I think it's her fault. Boy, I'd like to take a poke at her.
What are you looking for? Five straight knockouts?
Inside, Mike holds a stethoscope to Pat's chest.
50 hops. Better turn out you're okay. Otherwise, we'll skip the whole tournament.
Feel fine.
I'll let you know in a minute how you feel.
Feel even better if I didn't have to do this.
Quiet.
She bounces up and down on one leg while he sits in a chair looking over a paper.
48, 49, 50. Whew.
He listens to her heart.
Still going?
What?
I say, is it still going?
She speaks into his stethoscope.
Oh. All right, lay down.
Gladly. On my back or what?
On your what?
She drops onto a table. He starts massaging her calf.
If I hurt you, just yell out.
Mm-hmm. Ouch.
You got a knot in there.
Can work it out.
Hello. Who? What? Long distance? Okay, wait a minute. To you.
Yes? How are you? Oh, fine. No, honestly, much better, in fact, all.
Her bright smile fades.
What? Tell you the truth, Carl, I'd just as soon you didn't, such a long trip and all, and...
Mike rubs her neck.
And you know how I get when you, out. Nothing, really. He wants to come to the tournament. Tell him not to, will you? He won't listen to me.
Don't come.
What? No, wait.
You do understand, don't you, darling? Well, all right. No, no. I'll write to you, too. What?
Oh. Now we got to build that left arm up, otherwise your whole swing goes cockeye.
Huh? Sit up.
She does, with a frown.
When are you going to get wise to this collier bash? Hmm? You know what happened to you while I was rubbing you? You know what happened to your muscles? Huh? You get as tense as cold spaghetti. I can feel it.
I'll get over it.
Five will get you 10, you know.
Bet.
Okay, I'll tell you what you do. Don't use the right at all, see? Use the left for everything until I tell you different. Don't use the right for nothing.
Okay.
Not even to eat with, see? Everything with the left.
Everything with the left.
All right, later.
As she lies on her back, he takes her left hand.
Come on, push. Push.
She thrusts her hand forward. He shoves it back.
Push.
Providing resistance, he leans close. Their faces almost touch. He pulls back.
Now to get back to this collier thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so.
In what way?
In no way.
I mean, in what way not?
In no way not.
How would you know?
Oh, just by keeping my ears and my eyes open and my so forth. I've been around, you know. This man and woman thing, that's got to be a 50-50 thing. 50-50.
My feeling.
He's 75. You'll never be 50-50 with him. Why do you get yourself hooked with a guy who's got his horns on you?
They gaze at each other.
That's all.
She rises, and they walk out to the porch.
Let me ask you, Barney.
Ask.
Why don't he examine me? Ain't I...
What is this? What are you doing here? I ain't supposed to be weighing in.
Tomorrow.
What are you hanging around here for? What's the matter with you?
I don't want to go in alone no more. Lately.
Well, what do you want us to do? I'll go in with you? That'd be fine. Maybe the three of us could lick the guy. But you're a big boy now, Hunter. You know, you gotta learn to go in alone.
I mean in the corner. You used to.
I'm busy.
Yeah. Busy.
I gotta get ready to go south. What do you want me to do? Tear myself into little pieces?
Sure not.
I guess the trouble is I haven't asked you the three big questions lately.
Well, I don't want to go in alone no more.
Who made you, Huckle? What's the matter? Can't you hear good? Who made you?
You, Mike.
Who owns the biggest piece of you?
You, Mike.
What'll happen if I drop you?
I go right down a drain.
And?
And stay there.
And don't ever forget it. Now you go back and tell Gibby if he lets you loose again, he'll go down the drain, too.
He'll go. I got it.
Yeah. Now, what is it with little Nell?
Mike walks off with Barney.
Hey.
I don't like you.
I wish you did.
But I don't.
Why not?
You made everything different from what it used to in the old days. Last year.
How old are you, Hucko?
197 and a half.
What?
Pounds.
No, how old?
24. 5. Three, why?
Anyhow, too old for the three big questions.
Hey, you want me to tell Mike on
you? He didn't make you and doesn't own you, and you wouldn't go down the drain if he dropped you.
Then stay there.
You wouldn't. Ought to belong to yourself.
What do I want with myself?
When you're in that ring, you ought not to be worried about anyone, Mike or anyone.
Yeah, what about that guy I'm fighting?
Not even him. You see, it's never you against the whole world.
Yeah, that's good. I couldn't lick the whole world. I don't think.
Just you against yourself.
Yeah? Well, I can lick myself all right. I think.
You could?
I think.
That's all you have to do. Lick yourself. Make yourself and own yourself. Never mind, Mike or anyone.
Hey, don't he never ask you the three big questions?
I wouldn't let him. See, I'm trying to lick myself, too.
Hey, the only thing...
Huh?
Why don't he examine me?
Now, a sports column reads, Mike Conovan in the chips, here with Pat Pemberton, to defend her title in the women's pro golf matches. Davy Hucko, the winner, along, too. In a hotel room, Hucko faces Pat, Mike, and his trainer.
So then, biff, pow, zang, and then the bell, clong, into the six. So then I breathe, in and out. In and out.
Button it up, will you, Hucko? We've been through this 40 times already.
It's a 7 coming up, the end.
Go ahead.
Clong. I rush him. He's on his bike and peppering. He starts coming in, and that's when it happened. The thing, the big thing. He's coming, and I look, And who you think it is? It's me! It's me coming at me! So I get mad and rough, biff, pow, rough, boing, boing, boing! And I'm hollering down his ear, okay, Hucko, rough! Get this, Hucko, zop, kidney punch! You're through, Hucko, pow, pow, pow! So now I go in, and before I throw it even, I knew already it was the one. Boing! And I seen him drop. And then after, when Gibby jumps in and grabs me and gives me a kiss, I says to him, you see me how I flattened myself? So he starts putting cold towels on my head.
Okay, take a walk.
Okay, Mike. Hey, can I lift her up?
No.
Just once.
All right, then blow.
Yeah.
Hucko lifts Pat into the air, spins her around, then sets her down.
Thanks, Mike.
Beaming, he walks out with his trainer.
Could be he had his brains knocked loose.
Oh, he's fine.
Who's all this fighting yourself, Malaki? How does a guy like that pick up stuff like that?
I wonder.
Hey.
Me?
What's doing here? You been talking to him?
Do you mind?
No, no. I was going to suggest maybe have a talk with little Nell.
They sit on the foot of the bed.
Mike.
Now, you know, we got to go over these schedules.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah.
This thing about getting the same room as the last time I was down here.
Mm.
Is that just a coincidence, or did you arrange it?
Just a coincidence.
Tell me the truth.
I arranged it.
I thought so.
Why?
Because I'm getting to know you.
About time.
And it turns out you're just a big sentimental slob.
Yeah, that's me.
My, my, my.
My, my, my what?
Excuse me, I forgot to knock.
Come in.
Guess who's here?
Them.
How'd you know?
Tell him to swing it in.
As Barney leaves, Pat stares curiously at Mike.
The boys.
What boys?
The partners.
I thought you said they were anonymous.
Well, maybe they decided to be non-anonymous. After all, these gentlemen are no hoodlums, you know. They're businessmen, plain ordinary businessmen. Investors.
All the same.
Pat rushes into the bathroom. Barney enters with three men.
Okay. Hello, Speck.
Hello, Mike.
Glad to see you. Hank, how are you?
Good to be, boys.
So we'd like to see you, man.
Well, you know me. Never too busy to say hello. There she is.
How do you do, gentlemen?
How'd you do?
Pleased to meet you.
Likewise.
Wouldn't you like to sit down?
Yeah, sit down, man. You can all find chairs. Here, why don't you sit over there?
Barney brings Mike a stool.
Ah, thanks, Barney. Thank you, boy.
Let's everybody have a drink. On me.
Oh, I never allow no alcoholic beverages around the lady here.
Who said alcoholic? I mean, you know, like beer or something like that.
Even beer.
Milk?
Milk's okay.
So, how's about everybody a glass of milk?
All right. Some milk. Fill them up.
Hank taps Pat's shoulder.
There seems to be quite a lot of dough. You know, money around that says you can make it. You know, win it.
Well, money talks.
Barney serves everyone milk.
And when yourself, Barney?
Golf is what I call a nice game.
Very nice.
They each take a sip.
I mean, it's dignified. And fresh air. Men and women both. Now, you take those lady wrestlers. Now, that's something I can't stomach. Stan, lady wrestlers. That's something that shouldn't ought to be allowed. But golf, that's different.
Yeah, well, we don't wrestle.
Not yet.
Mike, tell Bonnie to go out. You mind?
Go out.
Nothing personal, Bonnie. Business.
Barney leaves.
Business?
Wait a minute.
The short, dark-haired Hank rises and shuts the window, while the big-nosed Sam turns to Mike.
Now, the thing is this, Mike. We want to know how you figured this thing to come out.
No idea.
You mean not yet?
I mean that after it's over, I'll let you know how it come out.
Wait a second. Maybe she ought to go out, too.
No, thank you.
Mike, look, we don't care what way it comes out. Only thing, we'd like to know ahead.
You want my opinion? I think she'll win it.
For sure she's?
No, not sure.
Makes a sick bet. The win, you can't be sure. The lose, that's insurance.
No, don't say anything.
Wait a minute, don't say nothing. Oh, boys, it's no go. Now, you remember I told you when you come in on this kid that I couldn't promise you nothing but a great lady athlete. No tricks, no deals, no nothing.
You think it's fair to us to all of a sudden go legitimate?
How'd you get in such a jam?
Look at the books, will you? I never knew there was so much money to be made, honest.
Sam rises.
I don't think it's right you being unfriendly.
He sets down his glass of milk and walks out. Speck gets to his feet.
I don't think it's right neither. In fact, it's wrong.
He also places his milk on the dresser and leaves.
Excuse me for not finishing my milk. Only thing is, it gives me the gas.
Hank follows the other two out. Pat stares after them, her eyes fretfully wide. She rises and locks the door.
I'll do whatever you say about it, Mike. I mean, whatever's best
What's
for you.
Don't talk
I
like
don't
that.
Care.
Say, listen here, I caught something from you, and it's good, I like it, see, but don't you catch nothing from me, because I ain't got nothing good to catch.
If there's going to be any trouble, I want my share of it.
Yeah, well, it looks like there's going to be plenty to go around.
No, I mean the way you said things ought to be.
How?
5-0, 5-0.
Mike furrows his brow in astonishment.
Lay down.
Now?
Yeah, I'll let you get a little nap and have dinner. Take a little walk then and turn in and, you know, nice and early. And don't worry about nothing. Don't worry about a thing.
He gently covers her with a blanket.
You're a great girl. You're the best.
Thanks.
He closes the curtains, then tiptoes out of the darkened room. Nighttime. Inside a restaurant, Pat sits with Mike.
And I'm going to tell you another thing furthermore. After you cop this thing in the morning, I'm going to start lining up some shots in Europe. Boy, will they go for you. All them Europeans.
I haven't copped it yet.
Sure you have. In my head, you have. The way I figure, you got the thing done. The thing you're going to do.
That's nice.
I can feel it in your bones. Sure, pretty dress you got covering you.
Thank you.
It's black satin.
You certainly are carrying the right silks tonight, kid. It does more for you than in pants you're always wearing.
Easier to play in, is why I wear the pants.
I think sometimes you ought to change your own, give the public a break.
I'm not sure that I'd be able to play it.
Hank and Speck join them.
What is this?
Sorry to barge in.
Well, barge out.
Wait a second, Mike. Something you don't know.
Sam's out.
In fact, it was us bought him.
I never seen him so upset since lately. See, Sam suffers from the high blood pressure.
He can't stand the gaff. He can handle any situation, so long it's a situation without aggravation. Otherwise, no.
And the minute he realized you were not going to play ball, it was a situation with aggravation.
Okay, thanks for the flash. Now get out of here, will you? Can't you see we're talking important business? Strategy.
That's just what we wanted to talk to you about, Mike. Strategy.
We've been considering, and we think you're very foolish, the both of you. You don't see it our way. It's a very full hatful we can grab off here.
Blow.
You shouldn't talk like that, Mike.
Not to us.
Please.
What's the matter with you? What are you trying to do? Destroy your own property? What's wrong with you two pinheads? Look at her. Can't you see you're getting her all tensed up?
You're absolutely right, Mike. And I think the best would be for us to step outside and talk over.
That would be good.
Why outside?
You know, quiet.
And we wouldn't get the lady all upset.
All right, let's go. You stay here. Be right back.
You will?
Well, I hope so. I ain't finished my baked potato.
Mike slides out of the booth and walks out with the two hustlers. Pat worriedly stares after them for a moment, then picks up her purse and follows. Outside, the men step onto a porch. Speck is tall and wears glasses.
Well, come on. What about it? Let's talk. Where do you want to go? Your hometown?
Speck, we'll talk out over here. Come on.
What's wrong?
Mike.
You stay out of this.
I want to go with you.
You don't think I can take care of myself?
No, I don't.
Well, now wait and see. I can take care of myself, you, and them. Now stay out of it.
He pushes her inside.
All right, let's go.
Pat creeps back out and sneaks toward the men, who stand in a back lot.
I told you already. I ain't gonna make no deals with you, see? Just get it!
Hank grabs Mike.
Two against one, huh? That's right. Two against one. And that's how it is in this business, too, wise guy. Two against one. You want your usual percent.
Pat pulls Hank's legs out from under him. She karate chops Speck, then pulls off his glasses.
Hey, my glasses.
Hank rises with
that's
a blackjack.
A
Pat twists his arm behind his back and cautions him with the blackjack. Mike stares, bug-eyed.
What is this?
It's no fair.
Did you ever see a thing like this before?
Restaurant patrons stand on the porch, grinning at her.
Ever see a thing like this before? What is it?
Mike scowls at her, then strides off. Later, at a police station, an officer examines the heavy blackjack pouch.
Which one of you belongs to this?
He turns to a policeman.
Where'd you get it, Kronsky?
From the lady.
Where'd you get it?
Out of his hand.
Where'd you get it?
In the head, that's where, and I want to make a complaint.
Settle down, we'll get to that. Now, which one of you wants to report bodily injury?
Nothing.
Me. Look at that.
Hank points
I
to his bruises.
That? And what do you think I got that?
Okay.
Internal injuries.
All right. What happened? Anybody?
This woman blew her top, that's all.
Did you see the whole thing?
I sure did. I was
a waiter, then Mike.
Just one word. I don't think anybody wants to make a big thing out of this, Captain. As a matter, we all know each other. These two gentlemen and I, we're in business together.
What kind of business?
Well, you see, the three of us, we own her.
The captain eyes Pat.
The three of you?
Yeah, sure. She's our lady athlete. Very well known, Captain. We got her entered in a tournament down here tomorrow.
I know.
Yeah, and we had this little disagreement, you know, a kind of a misunderstanding. Why don't you just forget about the whole thing?
What about this thing?
The blackjack.
Want me to forget this thing, too?
No, sir.
Just show me what happened.
What's the point?
I'd like to see what happened.
Well, we were standing over by the car, the three of us, just talking.
And where were you?
I was in the middle, where I usually am.
And you?
I was up on the porch.
All right, so you were in the middle. Get in the middle. And you on the porch. Stay over there. Now, you three, stand there arguing.
That's right. We were arguing. They came up behind me there.
In self-defense. Yeah, this guy here with the glasses on, he started like he's going to throw a punch.
I got kind of excited.
That was when I ran down.
Yeah, like Count Fleet, she ran down there.
What happened to your punch?
I never threw no.
No, he didn't get the chance to.
What happened when you got there?
Well, the first thing, I disengaged this fellow.
How?
Well, sort of like,
She pulls out Hank's legs.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Let go of me. Let go of me. What am I around here? I'm going to kill someone around here. Am I a sack of potatoes around here or something?
And what were you doing all this time?
Just what I'm doing now.
Nothing?
What else was there to do?
Then what?
Well, then, I am very sorry about this, and I should like to apologize to this gentleman for doing it.
Doing what?
For throwing away his eyeglasses.
She sure did.
Well, I couldn't think of anything else to do. Then he went down to hunt for them, and I turned, sort of to lead Mr. Conovan away.
To lead me? I thought you were going to carry me.
Go ahead.
Then the little one came toward Mike.
No, I come toward you.
Well, anyway, Mike started toward him.
Yeah, I came at you, you remember?
But I pushed him out of the way.
What did you do that for?
Well, I didn't want him to get hurt.
No, she didn't want me to get hurt, you see.
Then I think I took this little one by the wrist.
Go away from me. Yeah, she grabbed him by the wrist and went halfway down like this, see? So she took the jack out of his hand and looked at it and clonked him right on the head. Then he fell the rest of the way like this.
The waiter drops.
And what were you doing all this time?
Just watching.
I hope you fellas have been on the ball here. You can learn something.
She's okay.
Where'd you pick all that up anyway?
Oh, I've been around physical ed for years.
Physical ed? Who's he?
Education.
Okay, come here, all of you. Henry Tasley? That you?
That's right.
Also known as Harry Creevy?
That's been a long time since.
Also as Ray Briler?
Only once. I was little and they used
to... And under these names have you been apprehended 3, 4, 5, 7 times in this state on charges of illegal betting, bookmaking, assault?
Something like that, yeah.
And are you aware of the fact there's a court order signed by Judge Evan McEnroe, August 12, 1949, prohibiting you from carrying on any business of any nature whatsoever in this state?
I wasn't doing no business.
He says you were.
What business?
Sylvester Cawley. That you?
Yeah.
Also known as...
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, you got it down there. All okay.
Anything on him?
Nothing.
All right. I want to hold these two men pending a report to Judge McEnroe as to violation of his order. That's all. See you in the morning. Cadillac, Bronski.
Thanks.
Okay, we're adjourned.
As the men leave, the captain approaches Pat.
Hey, how does it look for tomorrow anyway?
Who knows?
Well, good luck. I got a few savings riding on you.
Oh, thank you.
Moments later, outside.
Mike, listen.
I've been listening all night.
Then do you want to talk? I'll listen.
Leave me alone, will you?
I can understand you're being upset, but why be upset with me? What have I done?
Too much, that's what.
But...
Later.
Mike, don't be like this.
Like what?
Impossible.
Oh, so that's what I am, impossible.
Right now, yes.
Well, I don't happen to agree with you. I think I'm possible. I also think I'm stupid.
Why?
For the way I handle you, that's why. I've built you up into some kind of a Frankenstein monster. That's what you are. You're just a great big Mrs. Frankenstein. And you don't think this thing is going to get around? If you don't think everybody's going to know about it, I won't even be able to show my face in Lindy's. I just don't like the combination. I thought I would, but I don't. See, I like everything to be 5-0, 5-0. I like a he to be a he and a she to be a she.
But you said...
As they enter the hotel lobby, Mike spies Collier.
Oh.
What?
He leads her away.
In the back, wait.
Why?
Quiet down.
Why?
Spotting them, Collier rises from his chair and walks past a vacuuming maid.
Oh, Pat!
I think somebody's yelling Pat.
No, Cat. They're calling their cat.
Pat, what's the matter?
Hello, Collier.
Now, you come back any time after the match. You're a little early now.
Now, listen, Santa.
Don't touch her right arm.
Well, how about you?
I got the other arm. Now, go away.
Now, listen here, old man.
Old man?
I've got just as much right as you have.
Now, look, come back in the morning, and we'll talk to
someone. Stop handling me, everybody, please.
She runs off.
You got a tough deal all right there, Buster. I feel for you.
Oh, you do?
That chick is sure stuck on you. I can't quite understand why, but there it is. She's so stuck on you that you jinx her.
You're in this business, Carnivan. Have you ever heard of anything like it before?
Oh, only 2 or 3 million times, that's all. You see, athletes, they ain't like us, you know. They're like what you could call freaks. Nobody can understand how they do what they do. They can't understand it themselves. And different things throw them. So who knows what, why, where, when? See?
Yeah.
It's just like, you take little Joe Poloni.
Who?
A jockey.
Oh, yeah.
For a long time, my horse, Little Nell, couldn't win nothing. She couldn't win, so she had trouble coming in last. And I couldn't figure it. And then I figured it. She couldn't win because Joe Poloni was riding her. I got rid. She won great. It's the same in this case, Buster. You are the wrong jockey for this chick.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah, I do say. So how about giving us all a nice big break and making yourself scarce tomorrow?
Why?
Because, don't you understand, when you're around, she's no good, she's dead, see? What you do after her working hours, I don't care. Go ahead, go as far as you like. But when she's on, you stay off. Can we deal?
No.
Why not?
Your business doesn't interest me.
Tell me something, will you? Were you born stubborn or did you learn this in college?
See you in the morning, Calvin. Hope not. On the first tee.
He goes inside. Mike sits stewing and purses his lips. Later, Pat lies in bed wearing pajamas. Her wavy brown hair cascades past her shoulders. Tossing and turning, she sits up, fluffs her pillow, and lies back down. Kicking one bare leg, she knocks off part of the covers. Now, Collier paces in his room, twirling the fringed belt of his robe. A smoldering cigarette is clenched between his fingers. He walks to the door, listens for a moment, then steps away. Taking a puff, he shrugs his shoulders and makes a wry face. He twirls his belt and starts to pace again. In another room, Mike lies awake in bed, reading a newspaper. He sets it on a night table and climbs out. Stepping into his slippers, he rises and puts on a trench coat over his pajamas. He grabs a key from a dresser and heads for the door. Mike steps out of his room and saunters to the door across the hall. Fitting his key in the lock, he opens it up and enters Pat's darkened room. She's still asleep. Mike goes over to the window and shuts it. Turning toward the bed, he tenderly pulls a blanket up to Pat's neck. Long-stemmed roses sit in a vase on the nightstand beside her. Suddenly getting a whiff, Mike covers his mouth.
What?
Pat clicks on a lamp.
Hey, don't use your right arm.
What is it?
Shh, shh.
Did you?
Sleep.
How long have you been here?
I just came in to check up. That's all. The windows. I do it every night.
You do what every night?
Check the windows and fix the covers. Sure. Sometimes you kick them off.
He shuts off the light and heads out. Pat lies back down, resting her head on the pillow. A dreamy look plays across her face as she follows him with her eyes. In the hallway, Collier steps out of his room just as Mike leaves Pat's. Collier stares at him in disbelief.
What's the matter? You can't sleep?
Mike enters his own room, shutting the door behind him. Collier remains in the corridor. He gazes into the distance for a moment, then bursts into Pat's room.
Don't say anything, nothing. Just shut up. Why, I didn't get onto this sooner than I have.
Get onto what?
Always funny when it's happening to some other guy, but not to me.
What are you talking
about?
What
makes you think I'd stand in your way? You want him or go to it? Looks to me you're perfectly suited. Two slick articles.
Help!
Can I see you? That's why I made my mistake. Too considerate.
Mike!
Shh.
Mike!
Be quiet.
Help!
Quiet down, will you?
Please.
You want everybody up here?
Mike!
Involve me in some kind of a scam?
No.
Mike storms in as Collier covers Pat with a blanket. Mike tries to pull Collier's legs out from under him. Collier kicks him away.
What are you, some wild man?
No, just the wrong jockey. But I guess you're the right one, all right.
What are you... What's he talking
about? Oh, come now. Let's not give it the innocent.
You don't think that... Tell him, will you? Talk!
What's the use?
No use. That's the use. Well, congratulations. But I wouldn't be surprised if I'm not the lucky guy.
He marches out.
What do you figure got into him?
I don't know. He frightened me.
I can imagine.
Why, I called you.
Well, you done the right thing.
Did?
I mean, what would I have did if you hadn't been around, done?
I figure you can take care of yourself.
No, I can't.
Yeah, I bet you could even lick me.
No, I couldn't.
Oh, sure, I think so.
No, I couldn't. I need someone to look after me.
What about me?
Why not?
Well, I don't know if I can lick you or you can lick me, but I'll tell you one thing. I do know.
What?
Together, we can lick them all.
You bet.
He sits beside her on the bed.
I can't handle this in my head. It rocks me.
Why?
Well, because don't figure it's as though Hucko walked in and handed me an engagement ring.
I'm not Hucko.
That you ain't.
So?
So, well, there's one thing only about us hooking
what?
Together that's... What I call a plenty long shot.
Nothing wrong with a long shot.
If you come out on top, that's a fact.
We will, Mike.
As somehow you don't seem to... An upper cruster like you and my kind of type that can't even speak left-handed English yet. The whole gizmo, it's hard to believe.
Not hard for me to believe.
You think so?
I know so.
She gazes at him longingly.
Okay, kid. You got yourself a deal.
With a serious look, he takes her hand, shakes it, and walks to the door. Opening it, he glances back and flashes her an impish smile. Daytime on the course.
Going to ask you the three big questions, Mike.
Go ahead.
Who made you?
You did.
Later, she tees off. As she climbs out of a bunker, Mike helps her up by tugging on one end of her club.
Who owns the biggest piece of you?
You do.
Later still, Pat crouches on a putting green, eyeing her shot. Her ball sits about 6 yards from the hole. Glancing up, she spots Collier in the crowd. A cigarette dangling from his lips, he throws her a withering look. Her eyes shift nervously. She turns to Mike, who smiles. Pat rises, lines up her club, and taps the ball. It rolls right into the cup. Mike joyfully rushes up to her.
What would happen if I ever dropped you?
I'd go right down the drain.
And?
And take you right down with me, Shorty.
She turns to him with a bright smile. Fade to black. A title appears. The End. Pat and Mike, made in Hollywood, USA by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Cast, Spencer Tracy as Mike Conovan, Katherine Hepburn as Pat Pemberton, Aldo Ray as Davy Hucko, William Ching as Collier Weld, Sammy White as Barney Graw, George Matthews as Speck Cawley, Loring Smith as Mr. Beeminger, Phyllis Pova as Mrs. Beeminger, Charles Buchinski as Hank Tassling, Frank Richards as Sam Orsell, Jim Backus as Charles Berry, Chuck Connors as the police captain, and others.